My name is Jess Noble and I live in Bundaberg.
My name is Jennifer McDuff and I live at Woodgate, but I've been a friend of Jess Noble's for a very long time and she knows so much about it. Today's date is the 8th of November 2011. We're in Bundaberg at Jess's house and we're recording with the Story Project. We're going to talk about Jess's early life because it's been infinitely fascinating and it's a whole world away. And Jess, I'd like to begin by asking a few questions, if that's okay with you.
Yes, that'll be great.
Well, you're born at the end of the First World War. Tell us the date.
Oh, on the 5th of the 8th, 1919.
So they were pretty important dates in everyone's history. You had the end of the First World War and you had a life. Where did your life start?
At a property called Taiira, which means kangaroo in Aboriginal, and my father ran cattle on the property that he had, and I was born in Miles, which was quite a long way away, and Dad had to take Mum down in a buggy with two horses to the hospital in Miles, and that's where I was born, and they had a thing going between them. If it was going to be a boy, it would be Jimmy. And if it was going to be a girl, it would be Jessie. So Mum sent Dad a telegram, "Jessie arrived today," or something like that. And he knew that he had a daughter.
And I'm sure he was absolutely excited about that because he ended up having two daughters, is that correct? And how many brothers? You're the
two. 10 years later, Mum had two boys.
So that's a long time in the bush, but there's the same sort of difference in my family. They had a girl first and 2 years later a boy, and then 9 years later I came along. So I know about that whole thing of being the end of the lines and you being the start of the family. So a lot of responsibility would have been on your head. Tell us about Taiira.
Taiira. Well, it was a cattle property. Oh, and it wasn't very big, but it's big enough. But the prickly pear started and it just about crueled the prickly pear, ate all the grass, and so there was nothing for the cattle. So Dad had to sell the property. And we went to live in Taroom, a small country place where my grandfather, my paternal grandfather, who was a doctor, lived. And we used to go in there about once a fortnight, and Mum used to make jam and butter because Dad milked cows, and all sorts of things to sell because they were very poor but very happy. We were a very happy family. And my sister and I just loved living at Taiira.
Did you equally like living at Taroom? Did you like living at Taroom?
No, we didn't like living at Taroom because I was nine and I had to go to school and I had to go in the class of the babies because I'd never been to school. And that was awful. I was so embarrassed. I was a big, tall, skinny girl with these little kids.
But that would have changed fairly quickly. You were, oh, yes. You were smart.
I had to jump every second class till I got up to scholarship.
Well, that wouldn't have taken you long. You'd have done that in two steps. But now, okay, well, look, before Taroom, your mum set out to try and help your father get rid of the prickly pear. What were some of the things that she had to do?
Well, she used to go out on a horse with a stabber, stabbing a pear, putting it in pentoxide and then putting it into the... But she might as well have spat on it. It didn't do any good.
Is this where your love of all those stories started? Because I remember often talking to you and you'll say, where have you been? And if I don't answer, up a hollow log, you know, that story, that saying comes from you. So I think your bush stories and your bush sayings are well renowned. So you may as well have spat on it, might be one of them.
I always ask anybody, if I haven't seen them for a long time, where have you been? Have you been up a hollow log?
So you and Jean obviously formed a lot of your fun looking around the property, poking at things, observing. What were some of the things that you remember specifically about that time with Jean?
Well, we were just mates, you know, and fight, of course. But we'd be always running around doing something. And one day we ran down to the shed where Dad was cleaning the shed out, and he had a bag in his hand and he tipped it up and shook it. And about 100 mice, not really 100, but quite a lot, ran down and ran up our legs. And we were screaming. I've never forgotten it.
Well, they've still got mice plagues out there around Taroom and Dolby and, yes. You know, with monotonous regularity. So it's good to know that, you know, this is not a current thing, is it? No. It's happened a long time ago. All right, now, Jean, was Jean accident prone? Because there was one time when it got very serious, didn't it?
Yes, she put her finger on the cogwheels of a chaff cutter, yes. Dad was turning it and she put it in and slipped in the cogwheel, and she was standing there with a finger. Dad stopped the thing straight away, and Dad said to me, I can still remember, race to the shed and get the hammer. And Mum said, what's the good of a hammer? So she turned it backwards and out came the finger, twice as long, minced meat. Yes. So then Dad had to go and get the horses and put it in the buggy and take us to the neighbour, because he had the first car in the whole district. And we thought we'd get to the hospital fairly quickly. But when we got there, he said, well, we can't go tonight because the horse that pulls the car to start it doesn't like the lights of the car, so we'll have to wait till the morning.
So Jean had to wait with a finger bandaged up and everyone's paying attention to her and get to a hospital or a doctor the next morning.
Yeah, that's right.
But in the family, you all joked about the fact that you all bar one brother and missing part of a finger, is that right?
Yes.
That yours is the same?
There's four of us in the family and I've got half a finger off, and my sister's got half a finger off, and my brother's got two fingers off. So there's only one brother. So my younger brother rang him up and said, if you want to be in our club, you'll have to get a finger off.
That's a lovely story. I like that one. So now look, what about school? So you went to school, you're in this early classes, you realise that this wasn't as much fun as Taira and Kaira, sorry, I've got that wrong. And what was next? You sat for scholarship?
No, we went to live in Dolby.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yes.
So you left Taroom, went to Dolby.
Yes.
You sat for scholarship?
Yes.
How did you go?
Oh, I just scraped in because I had no early grounding. I knew nothing about maths. I still don't know anything about maths.
Well, it didn't stop you. You've run businesses. Yeah. You've been able to tally and keep households. So I think it's really nothing to do with that.
Yeah, and I did my nursing.
That's
and
right.
And passed all my exams.
So, okay, well, high school. What year did you go to? Did you do a scholarship? What did you do after that?
Then, I've forgotten, I think. First year at high school and then the second year, we sat for the exams.
So now, your father's played a very important role in your life. So what were the key things? What did you get most from your dad?
Oh, love.
That's pretty big.
Wonderful. He had awful feet and he gave the four of us the most terrible feet, but he gave us a lot of other things that were great.
Well, would you like to think about them? What did he give you?
Oh, well, mostly.
What did he teach you?
Oh, he taught us to be kind to everybody and to... But Jean and I, we fought like cat and dog, and Mum used to make us lie on the bed, and she had a big strap, go and find the strap, and then she'd come in and give us a few whacks on the legs. And one day, one of the was a buckle, and it hit Jean on the leg at the top. And when we went to school, Jean said, "Look what my mother did."
she had a brand mark, did she, from the buckle? Oh, it was pretty common.
We needed it. Oh, we were terrible. It was mostly my fault because I used to pinch things out of her drawer under clothes, you know.
Pretty common for sisters.
Yeah.
I don't think you're alone there.
No.
So this kindness of your dad, now... So he had the property, but he went into other areas. So what other areas of work?
Well, he became a land ranger.
And what did a land ranger do in those days?
Well, they go out to properties to see that the people are doing the improvements on it and to see that they're running it properly. So that's what that is. And he used to go... up to Chinchilla and go out then. He used to leave his horses there and go out in a buggy to all the different properties and stay a night with them if he had to. And then he'd come back, catch a train and come home. And one day he was coming home. And when he got to our place, he walked from the railway station to our place. He looked in the window and Mum was in bed with the baby. And he didn't even know she was going to have a baby because we didn't have a phone.
So which brother was this? Was this Barry? Was
Barry,
this the last one?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I also remember a story from the Platts, and when Marilyn had one of the six bundles of kids, and they came out and said, "Well, Mr. Platt, they're all doing well." "What do you mean, all?" He said, "There's a set of twins in there." So these are the sort of things that happen in families, and it was very, very common. You know, people were quite private, even though you had your parents. It was pretty rare. My mum was a nurse. So you nursed. We nursed my dad. But we also learnt things within the family. Like we learnt how to give injections, how to look after people when they were sick, because you were fairly remote.
Yeah.
And penicillin wasn't so readily available. Mum was nursing right when penicillin was just released. So, you know, they knew about the finite sort of quantities that they had to administer, and they were very meticulous. And I think that sort of thing stays with us. I mean, you know what medications you're on, and your nursing background gives you that. And although I didn't nurse, we still did all these things. And remember very, very well washing Dad down and giving him injections and, you know, cleaning him. And it just seemed like it was part of life. And I think that's what I get from you. You were so involved. These were the things that were part of your daily life. Mm. Not necessarily like that, but still you did what you had, whatever needed doing, someone in the family did it. Mm. So is there something that you can think of that your dad took or mum took those responsibilities and they just did them, either for your family or for the community?
Yeah, well, mum was a great person. She was in every committee during the war, the Second World War, and she was always working, making jam to sell and all sorts of things like that. And I can remember when I had my first baby, we went to stay with my mother when the child was growing up a bit, or she was about two, I suppose. And Mum was doing all these lollies in bottles for the soldiers, I think. I don't know who it was for, but something like that. And my little girl, as soon as she heard this rattling, lol, 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 she'd go running
out. So that... both your kids had the opportunity to know your parents well.
Yes, yeah, it was good.
And so it's really invaluable, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I never knew any grandparents. No, and I for me, when I had children, it was really important that they knew their grandmothers. We only had one on either side.
Yes, well, I was the eldest of 16 grandchildren on my mother's side, and I had a wonderful time with my grandparents.
So what were the sort of things that you think that they gave you? You know, not just physical things, but the traits that you've taken on into life.
Oh, yes. Well, Granddad taught me a lot. We used to go riding round fences. He taught me how to... all the different birds and how to make a quart pot boil quickly.
Oh, how do you do that?
You get lots of little twigs and see which way the wind is blowing and put it on the side that the wind's blowing and keep on putting twigs that get bigger and bigger. And we used to have a race, he and I, to see who could boil their quart pot the quickest. And he always let me win.
That wouldn't be such a bad little test for people, would it? I suppose that followed on in all those years that you started pottery. Firing kilns, you were probably chief of the firebox when it came to those the kilns at the showground.
Yeah.
So he gave you that. What did you think? Was your grandmother musical, or was she a good cook? Or did she read stories to you?
Oh. Yes, my grandmother, when we used to go there for Easter, when we'd go into her room on the Duchess, would be all these dolls for Easter. We just longed to get there. Mm. We had to go in a buggy, take 2 days to go, and couldn't get there quick enough to get into Grandma's room because we knew she'd have some dolls for us.
Isn't that lovely? So every year that was the time she gave you a doll.
Yeah.
Did she dress them herself?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, do all the sewing? Yeah.
Oh, yes, she was a great sewer. She made clothes for us.
Mm. You wouldn't believe it. I still have my first doll.
Have you?
Yes, and I still joke with an older cousin, and we didn't have very many. We had some, but there's not very many of them left. And he hadn't long lost his mum's slightly older sister, one of the sisters. But Jean had died when her family was young, and Peter is the youngest. He was only about 7, so he came to stay with us. we're at Woodgate and we're playing in some fit of Pete broke my doll. Well, I only had that doll mended a few years ago, a new black hair on her and everything else so that my granddaughter can have her. And it sits out every, you know, all the time. And I, you know, delight in him. Well, you broke my doll. You started it, you know. So that's where we start with the jibbing and the teasing and and it still goes on. And I'm sure that happened in your family, you know. So what are the things that you and Rolly went out to the bush? Did you find that anything was it the same as the bush that you'd know?
Where did you get to? We went out west. Went out to Winton and onto a big sheep property. And he said to me, would you like to come out mustering? Because I could ride a horse. My grandfather taught me way back. And you can help me muster the sheep. He said, you can take the dogs with you. Well, I took the dogs with me, but I didn't know how to tell them what to do. And the sheep went hell west and crooked. Oh, is that a swear word? No. And anyhow, so he came cantering up to me. What are you doing? He said. Well, I said, you can take your dogs and take me too, because I'm not going to muster sheep. I love cattle, not sheep.
So that was a major point of difference for the pair of you.
Yeah.
Did you didn't go out mustering again?
Never.
That was it.
No.
Oh. So how long were you out in the bush with that stint?
Oh, I don't know. I think I was away. Yes, I went to live at Julia Creek then.
And what was at Julia Creek?
Sheep.
Not much.
Sheep everywhere.
I hope you liked mutton.
Well, I didn't then after eating it every day.
Mm.
No.
No, I think that's a pretty common.
One of the properties that we're on, we had a cook and he used to cook all the food. And one day he killed a rooster and hung it up all day and went to cook it. It was green. And I said, you're not going to cook that? Oh, yes, that's how they do it in England. Well, I said, oh, we're not doing it in Australia. Yeah.
I think, you know, bush cooks and property cooks were a breed unto themselves, weren't they?
Mm.
So you had them come in when you had shearers. Did no, they work they with the shearer team?
No, the cook was there all
actually
the time.
Had the property. Mm.
Yeah. But in the another place we went, the cook left when she heard I was coming. And she didn't know me or anything about me. So I was cooking for 14 men. There were 14 men working on the property. And nearly killed me. I was out here.
You're expecting Bob at the time, were you?
Jack.
Oh, Jackie, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, well, does Bob remember anything of those times?
No.
No. Was he born out?
No, he was born in Rockhampton.
Okay. Well, see, Mum was nursing at Isisford, which is out there. Yeah. And so there's a lot of the times that part of our lives have crossed, haven't they, and crisscrossed.
Yeah, that's right.
You'd be away when I was born in 49. Well, I suppose it was the late 50s, early 60s that I remember collecting eggs from your parents who used to live next to Doug and Mary Haig in Churchill Street in Childers.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. And I remember Mum saying, oh, little Jenny.
Well, there was little Jenny Haig next door, but and we were the same age. I think there was a
but
month
she's
apart.
Talking about you, collecting the eggs.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. And I think your mother grew beautiful status. Where do you think the love of gardening has come from?
My father.
Is that right? What did he grow?
Everything.
So he had a vegetable garden, fruit trees,
and that house in Childers, he put in trees and all sorts of things. And Mum was the gardener with the flowers.
Mm.
And, you know, when I was a child in Dalby, I always had my little plot of flowers that I looked after right from when I was a kid.
So you planted them from seed, or did your dad have some, did he grow them from seed for you, or have find some plants for you to put in, or did you start?
He'd grow them from seed and give me the plants.
Mm.
Yes.
Because anyone walking around, I mean, your garden now, and just in the room that we're in, we've got the smell of your roses. Oh. You had a love of roses, which took you virtually all around the world,
yeah.
Didn't you?
Yes, I did. I had a lovely trip around the world judging roses.
Yeah. So where did you get to?
Oh, well, I went to England. First of all, I went to Holland. And then to England, or Denmark, because my grandfather came from Denmark.
The one that was the doctor?
The doctor, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of what other countries
you went to. Japan?
Oh, yes, Japan.
You went to Japan before most people had even thought of going to Japan. So what years do you think we're talking about then? Were you starting to travel in the 70s, or was it in the 60s that you were doing the rose judging?
Oh, I think I started in the 60s.
Was it?
Hmm. Because I was travelling around the world for 6 years. I was always going somewhere, you know.
Probably the most well-travelled person that I know. There's not too many places that you haven't been to.
No.
Iceland. We'll try that one. Mm. So, you were required to judge roses.
Yes.
So where did they where did they hold these rose shows?
Oh, mostly in a hall.
So in London?
Remember in Japan, when they... prizes, when I'd awarded all the prizes, everybody had to get a prize. And, that was so difficult. So I'd give the rose that was the best, my thought, and then I'd just go 1, 2, 3, 4, because I'd have 15 or 16, and I'd just do them down like that, because it was so hard. But anyhow, and when I had to... present the people who'd won, and they'd come up on the stage, and I'd be standing up there with the president and secretary, and all of they were all on the stage too, and I was like a big elephant with all these little men beside me.
So it's mostly men who grew the roses. It's some really interesting trays in Japan, if that's the case, because it's the men that often collect collectors' dolls in Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's quite strange. So most of the men grew roses.
That's right, yeah. And they took me out along a lot of the farms. I walked half of Japan. Oh, God.
So, let's think about some other things. So, you've done your rose, you know, that whole life about roses. It seems as if you've had many, many lives, you know. So, which of the early ones have been the key part?
Yeah.
But, you know, what age were you when you took up pottery?
Oh, I don't know.
Might you have been in your 50s?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it might have been.
I came here in 1951. And I started with the with gardening with Ruth Day Lewis up there.
Mm. And she was interested in pottery.
Yeah, and then Jack came and I nursed her till she died.
Mm.
And she left me some money. So I had a shed built.
Built your studio.
And I started pottery there. Mm. Mm.
You know, I mean, you know, we could list all of the major potters in Australia and you've met them.
Mm.
And they've been here in the house. You've had Japanese visitors here, really well-known potters. So that was a very, and has been, and right up to now, you still go to pottery Thursday mornings, is that right? Yeah. We still do some little handwork. I've got pieces on there. I use your cups every day. The plates are in use. So there'd be many, many people. You've got all your wombats sitting on the table here. And what else have you got?
They're getting ready to be fired. And then they're going to go up in the garden.
Your garden's actually a testament to all of your creativity. You know, as we look out, the bougainvillea's looking beautiful. Those little yellow daisies are fantastic. So it's all about colour. If you were to think about how you'd sum up your life, how do you, you know, at this point, it's still colourful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I was better, though.
Jess, everything has to wear out, you know. You can't have things in pristine condition and reach the grand old age of, 92, without a bit of wear and tear. So, you know, so what if you help with a walk or anything? It doesn't matter. You got your lipstick on, you've got your bright top on, you're fantastic. The garden looks good, the house smells good. It doesn't get much better than that. What do you reckon?
I wish I could walk better.
Well, you know, hang around, they'll come up with something good.
Well, I wish they'd come up something good for the pain.
You'll be the queen of Panadol. There you go.
I'm taking 6 a day now. I've had a very happy life. And I've had a lot of sadness too, but I've overcome it. That pottery, you know, with the shed and the garden, I used to sit out there and be doing pottery and looking at the garden and thinking of Jackie. Mm. And that's how I got over her death.
Yeah,
and I still miss her terribly.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think, but anyhow.
It's something that we both share, the loss of our daughters, and I think that's why the friendship's been as strong as it has, because we understand each other. You know that loss never leaves you.
No.
And I'm sure there'd be times in the year, any number of times, where you feel it more sharply.
Yeah.
And no one else understands, and it's quite okay that they don't understand, because...
Yes, but I've had so much happiness...
Exactly.
...that I can overcome it, see?
Yeah.
I don't let it get me down.
No, but it is something that you acknowledge, and I think that's a very, very important thing.
Yeah, and we've been a happy family. Four of us, but there's two gone and two left, and Barry and I, he came over to see me a few weeks ago from Toowoomba, where he lives, he and his wife, and I said, oh, it's lovely to see you. Yes, he said, I came to see if you're alive or dying.
Oh, ever honest, all in the families, aren't they? No, I think you have a very rich life, and that's testament to whenever you have your parties, the number of people that are here, and they want to come and they want to celebrate with you.
Yeah,
and that's a lovely thing. You're not isolated because you can't walk around or hop on the phone or any of those sort of things. I mean, you only have to know the contribution that you make in every possible way. It doesn't stop there. I mean, they're with young people, aren't they? You have newer friendships in the last few years.
Yes.
And people that are starting their families.
It's amazing. When I was on all these trips around the world, I always congregated with the young ones, not my age group. And I don't know why, but that's how it happened.
They're more fun.
Yes.
Well, I think that's pretty much a secret too, isn't it? Just you're interested in what other people are doing, and you ask them questions, and you want to be around them, and that's a great contribution to anyone's life.
Thank you, Jenny, for helping, for coming and talking with me. I enjoyed that very much.
Well, so did I, Jess. Stop, it's always a pleasure.
I haven't got any pain while I'm talking to you.
Good. We might get you singing yet.
Yeah.
Singing's a good one for that. No, it's always a pleasure, darling. You know that.
Mm.